Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So this appears to be one of the few episodes we've actually prepared for the PowerCast in recent weeks where the friendly neighborhood folks at Microsoft and Skype have not fouled us up. Where maybe I am, shall we say, challenging the powers that be. I don't know. Our guest this week is Michael Mays, first time in the PowerCast, but I gather he's listened to us before, which is always good to know. Tim Swartz is our special co-host, and we're going to be exploring critters. Okay? Michael Mays is evidently an expert on out-of-place known animals, or those that may or may not exist for the past 15 years. Now, we know lots of species of animals are becoming extinct all the time. So, is there any connection with that, Michael?
Maybe peripherally. Mainly, I'm looking and involved in what would typically be considered a cryptid, you know, an animal that, you know, the very existence of it anywhere at any time is debatable and has yet to be proven. So that's where I spend the bulk of my time. Now, there's kind of a subcategory of out-of-place animals that sometimes I had a report a few years ago of an alligator in Cross Plains, Texas, which is way out west, nearly the Abilene. They had no business being there. No doubt somebody's pet got released, but people were freaking out about, you know, this monster they were seeing in their stock ponds and stuff, and it turned out to be an alligator. So sometimes the root of these things turn out to be something that's known but out of place, so we try to get to the bottom of that. And then I guess there's a third category, which would be animals that existed at one time but are thought to be extinct now, but sometimes that's debatable. One such as the ivory-billed woodpecker would kind of fall into that category. So that's kind of where I spend the bulk of my time, is in those areas.
When it comes to a critter that is in the wrong place, like a crocodile or something, is it possible somebody, some wiseacre, decided to bring it in and then it got out of hand?
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes it's intentionally done. Sometimes it's done. People have their motives aren't bad necessarily, but it gets out of hand. A great example of that would be these pythons that are all over the Florida Everglades now. These were initially pets that were bought and sold through the exotic pet trade, and they got unmanageable. They get big, and they get, depending on the species, some are meaner than others, more aggressive, and they got to be a handful. So a lot of people thought they were doing them a favor. You know, they didn't have the heart to put the animal down, so they just turn it loose in an environment that it's not meant for. And so these things have gotten loose in Florida, and they've kind of taken over. They have no natural predators there, so they're wreaking havoc on the ecosystem there. So that's a prime example of an animal that doesn't belong there, that was released, and now they're breeding like crazy.
So it's possible that dealers are selling these things to make money. Now, I'll tell you a crazy story. This goes back to like 1966, where my first wife and I, that was Geneva, she and I, well, she saw this ad about get a squirrel monkey, whatever that is, which is a tiny kind of monkey. And it would only cost $29.95 plus shipping. And we never had a pet before. Big mistake. So we did get the thing, and the thing, as soon as she takes it out of this cage, it's running around the place. It bites like crazy, and eventually we found a way to rid ourselves of it in a humane way. But the point being here is there are people who think, this is cool. I'll get a pet. Who's it? And it really serves the interests of people who are selling those things, but lots of other people do not understand what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. When I was doing research for my book called Shadow Cats, which was looking into the Black Panther phenomenon, I discovered that the exotic pet trade is second only on the black market to weapons and drugs, as far as, you know, just illicit black market business. And so it ranges from everything from like the big cats, you know, tigers, lions, and things like that, down to like alligators and snakes and things like that, small primates, like you mentioned. My own father, back when he was a teenager, his family went to Florida on a short vacation, and he bought a little baby alligator and brought it back here to Texas. Now, we've already got alligators here, but he was keeping it as a pet, and started to get big. And fortunately, you know, the family dog actually took care of the little gator a few more months, and the situation probably would have been reversed. But yes, it can be just as simple as that. You know, someone doesn't have the heart, you know, to dispatch an animal that's an invasive that doesn't belong there, and they turn it loose. And again, doing the research for the Shadow Cats book, I came across the account of a guy in Arkansas. He had a tiger, and it's very expensive, you know, to feed a tiger. And so he didn't want to do it anymore. And how he thought this was a good idea, I'll never know. He put it in a cage in his truck, and he drove about 100 miles away and turned it loose in the woods in Arkansas. Just a horrible idea for many reasons. And then, of course, this thing was raised from a cub, and it couldn't really hunt, couldn't really take care of itself. A week later, he came home from work, and it's laying on his porch waiting for him. It had managed to find its way home. So, you know, there's all kinds of stories like that out there, and this is how, you know, invasives can just infiltrate an area, and it's also where some of these cryptid sightings can take place. Some sort of exotic animal that's not native to the area, the people in that particular region are not familiar with, could very easily jump to the wrong conclusion. You know, if an orangutan or a gorilla somehow got loose in the woods and some hunter saw that, some hunter in Texas is not going to think gorilla. He's going to think more than likely, you know, Bigfoot, something like that. So this is the kind of thing we try to get to the bottom of, and some of the things I look into.
By the way, I did look up squirrel monkeys, and today it costs between $2,000 and $4,000 to buy one. Not that I want to buy one. Don't send one to me as a gift. We have a nice little dog, and he keeps us busy enough. But it costs us $29.95. Now, I don't know in terms of the offer whether you were getting a healthy animal or what. It was a silly thing to do. We were just kids, newly married, and we did a foolish thing. But the last foolish thing, though, is when you're looking at out-of-place animals, how do you separate the stuff that there's a reason why they might be there, and it's all about greed, or something of the nature, or these things are there because of something weird going on?
Well, sometimes you never do get to the bottom of that. Sometimes it's the pet trade, something along the lines of what you just described, what you and your first wife did. You know, nobody's intending any ill consequences from it, but they maybe just didn't think it all the way out, and they brought this thing in. Sometimes environmental pressures, habitat, destruction, deforestation, things like that. When an animal's home, wherever that might be, is threatened or taken away, they have to go somewhere. The neighborhood where I'm in now didn't used to be so much of a neighborhood, and we would hear the coyotes, you know, crying and howling all night, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. It was really cool.
You know what's really cool? These announcements coming up. And we've got Michael, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
7 million children suffer from asthma, more than any other chronic disease. Most asthma attacks are caused by allergic reactions to allergens, including those left behind by cockroaches and mice. In fact, 82% of U.S. households contain mouse allergens, and cockroaches are found in up to 98% of urban homes. How can you protect your family? Find out at PestWorld.org. A message from the National Pest Management Association and the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology.
Did you know that you could easily be saving up to 90% on your taxes by simply making a phone call? That's right. The Fortune 500, the globalists, all the big billionaires and millionaires, they know about the loopholes written into the law where most of them pay almost zero tax. In fact, many of them pay no tax. You even see it on the news. How are they able to do that but the common person can't? So whether you're a school teacher, a lawyer, a scientist, a millionaire, a billionaire, or whether you're just a regular blue-collar worker, everybody should learn about the legal, lawful loopholes. And we've got an organization and a group that I am so proud to be working with, American Tax Solutions. GCN has a special deal with them to get you the best rates. Here's the most important part. They save you money and then get part of the savings. This is an absolute win-win solution. You've got to give them a call at 855-907-4841 or GCN Tax Cut. That's GCNTaxCut.com. The only way you miss out is not making the phone call. Make it now.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The environment you were in was really cool. A small town, a forested area, what?
Well, it really wasn't a forested area. I grew up in East Texas, a forested area, but I'm in Central Texas now is where I live, and it's more open. It's kind of the beginning of the Texas Hill Country, I guess you could say. But, you know, the coyotes were out and about, got a healthy deer population, and we would hear them, you know, nightly. And as development picked up, more and more homes were added, and roads were put in. You know, we don't hear them anymore here at the house. Those animals went somewhere. Now, they were forced out, and so they are now living somewhere where they did not before. Similar things like that can happen to other species. It can force them into areas where they are not found naturally. And I think that's something that can happen. A lot of the big cat sightings, the Camino mountain lions and bobcats and things are kind of learning to live on the periphery of society, and because they just have nowhere else to go. There's a pretty well-known incident in Los Angeles, a mountain lion living in a park right in the middle of town for years and years. Didn't bother people, came out at night, but it's living in downtown L.A., basically, and that's not by choice, you know, that's they're doing what they have to do. And so sometimes environmental pressures like that force them to go somewhere else. I'm sure there are numerous other reasons. You know, animals do wander. Sometimes you have a dominant, you have an alpha, head of a pack or a group or a troop or whatever you want to call it, and they don't tolerate younger males, and they force them out, and so they go in search of their own group to start, and they have to establish their own territories, you know, somewhere else. So there are a lot of reasons an animal could end up somewhere where it originally was not, and really probably should not be.
One of the fascinating things, you know, we were talking about out-of-place animals is the feral pigs. And I think it was your website that had these absolutely fascinating pictures of some of these pigs that are just absolutely huge in size. And a lot of people don't realize they're called wild boars, but they're, a lot of them are descended from domesticated pigs.
Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, they all are. Hogs were not native to Texas, or they were brought over with the European explorers when they started to come over to the, quote, New World, end quote. They got out and established themselves, and they do quite well. The really large ones like that tend to actually be escaped domestics who haven't been feral very long. It's amazing the transformation that takes place in a domestic hog once it gets out. The tusks grow, the hair gets thicker and wirier, and they just turn into the snout lengthens. It's really amazing what can happen in just a generation. So a lot of the really big ones, these hogzillas you've heard about, they're probably only a generation or two removed from being domestic stock. The ones that are truly wild and feral now, that you can get some big ones in excess of 200 pounds, 300, 400 pounders. They're the exception to the rule for sure. But an example of an invasive here in Texas, you can hunt them year round and don't even have to have a hunting license to shoot a feral hog in Texas. There's so many of them. Mm.
In your latest book, Valley of the Apes, Search for Sasquatch in Area X, you know, it seems like you're always running into these wild pigs and really have to exercise a lot of caution because they're extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I think their reputation is a bit overblown, but mm-hmm. you have to be respectful. Like any animal, they come in all temperaments, just like people do. And you come across one, a little boar that's having a bad day, and you know, he can ruin your day in a hurry. So you have to watch for him. And honestly, as far as when we're out and about, especially in East Texas, in Louisiana, they're really bad. They're not quite as bad up in Oklahoma, where the area, our study area that we call Area X, is. It's just so rocky. It's hard for them to do all the rooting around they need to do to survive. It's a little tougher on them up there. But in points farther south, Piney Woods of East Texas, for example, yeah, they're just overrun. We're overrun here in Central Texas, and it's a very different environment. And they can be very aggressive. You're right. I worry about running into a hog more than anything else, probably.
I know my own past experiences with them in the wild. If, you know, out there in the dark, if you don't realize what you're hearing, you hear those things, mm-hmm. you know, screaming at night, it will raise the hair on the back of your neck. If you don't know what you're hearing, you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I would really encourage anybody that's going to be out in the woods at night to really learn the sounds of the native animals. I mean, because there are a lot of things that are very, you know, run of the mill that will just scare the pants off of you if you don't know what they are. If you've ever heard a rabbit screaming or a fox, you'll just think there's just a horrible monster out there. I mean, it really, if you don't know what it is, like you said, it's just hair raising. It's terrifying. And so I would really advise people who are going to be out in the woods at night to learn those sounds, you know, learn what a screaming fox sound like, what a caterwauling bobcat sounds like, because it just sounds otherworldly out there. And, you know, when you're out there in the dark, you know, your imagination tends to take off a little faster than it might in the daylight. So, you know, you want to really be as familiar as you can with the sounds that these regular critters make.
Now, I don't want to say your original interest, but, your website at first, you know, dealt quite a bit with, black cats out of place, felines that, and you've branched out now into, Bigfoot research. I mean, you know, were you always interested in Bigfoot, or did this just happen to be, you know, a natural progression from your, initial interest in, big black cats?
Well, I was actually, involved in the Bigfoot stuff before the interest in the black cats came up.
Okay.
As a child of the 70s, it was kind of a golden age for Bigfoot. You know, you saw the $6 million man fought Bigfoot on TV, and the Legend of Boggy Creek came out, and all that kind of, the Patterson-Gimlin footage was only a few years old at that time. So as a kid, I was always fascinated with it, and was actually already a member of the group I'm involved with now. At that time, I started writing the blog because I do have interest other than just in the Sasquatch phenomenon.
Let's do our break here, sir. We've got Michael, Gene, and Tim looking about strange critters. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days. You still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
State senators in Indiana approve a near-total ban on abortion by a single vote in a rare Saturday session. The bill would prohibit the procedure unless rape or incest is involved, if the pregnancy is less than 8 weeks post-fertilization, 12 weeks for someone younger than 16 years old. In either situation, a notarized affidavit attesting to the attack would be required. The legislation now moves to the State House for public testimony and possible amendments. President Biden back in isolation after testing positive again for COVID-19. There have been no reemergence of symptoms, and the president is doing quite well, says White House physician Kevin O'Connor, who adds there is no reason to reinitiate treatment at this time. Upcoming trips out of Washington have been canceled. July turned out to be the best month for Wall Street since November 2020. This is USA Radio News. New York City declaring monkeypox a public health emergency a day after New York State declared a disaster emergency over the outbreak. The Big Apple, the epicenter of the outbreak in the U.S., is getting 80,000 doses of the vaccine to deal with monkeypox. The U.S. has more than 4,600 cases of monkeypox. About a third of them are in New York State. The Biden administration is thinking about declaring monkeypox a federal health emergency. More than 50 Ukrainian prisoners of war were killed and another 75 were wounded in an attack in a separatist-controlled area of eastern Ukraine. Ukraine and Russia are blaming each other for the deaths of the POWs. According to Ukrainian officials, the Kremlin launched nighttime attacks. The International Red Cross is asked to visit the prison to ensure that the wounded had proper treatment. The $1.3 billion Mega Millions jackpot will not be going to me. It will, however, go to whoever bought a ticket at a Speedway in Des Plaines, Illinois. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Hey, trader, listen up. The markets have changed. Have you changed your trading strategies? Vantage Point can help you conquer volatility. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word money to 813-813 and discover how to predict stock market trends 1 to 3 days in advance with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. No matter which way the market moves, Vantage Point's patented AI can give you a massive edge. Text money to 813-813 to get what you need to stay ahead of markets and find your best entries and exits. Text the word money to 813-813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting, you agree to the terms available at vantagepointsoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and texts using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of Vantage Point. Your consent is not a condition to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text money to 813-813.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Strange creatures of the night. And it's not a werewolf, or is it? And it's not a vampire. But we're talking about the interest that Michael Mays has in weird stuff. Weird creatures, some just in the wrong place, others, who knows what they are.
So I started the blog because I do have interest outside of the whole Bigfoot phenomenon. And so was something interesting, one of these, sometimes it was an out-of-place animal. Sometimes it was, like you said, you saw the post on the really giant hogs that from time to time people bring in. Just anything's unusual in the natural world I was interested in. And I came across an article where someone up in Plano, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas, had reported seeing a Black Panther. And the location was obviously a little strange. You know, that's a pretty urban area. And then the fact that there's no such thing as a Black Panther, as far as science is concerned, that caught my eye. So I just did a post on it. And when I did, my inbox just blew up. It just blew up. It was just literally hundreds of people, you know, emailed in and commented with their own visuals of these animals, these black, big, long-tailed black cats. And, I grew up in East Texas, and we didn't know they weren't supposed to exist. We just thought of them as another animal that lived in the, in the bottomland, just not so different than a hog or a coyote or anything else. And it wasn't until I was an older man, adult, that realized that there's not supposed to be any such animal. Mountain lions are not black, and they, according to science, do not carry the genetics necessary to be black, even from time to time. And the cats of the world that can be melanistic, that do have those genetics, don't live here.
And so, and they're also, you know, there's no such species as a black panther. You know, leopards can be black. Jaguars can be black. Even bobcats from time to time can be black. But there's no separate species of black panther. And most folks don't realize that. And like I said, my inbox just blew up with these messages. And so whenever I'd come across a visual, I'd publish some of them. And every time I did a post on it, more and more people would come in. And it got to the point I had so many reports and had talked to so many people, I thought, you know, I really should do something with this. And so that was the genesis. That was the idea behind the book that I wrote. It's called Shadow Cats, The Black Panthers of North America. And it was just about this this whole long-tailed black cat phenomenon that, you know, these are animals are not supposed to exist. They're not supposed to be here. And yet they're being seen by the hundreds. Many more witnesses to the Black Panther phenomenon than there are Sasquatch witnesses, for example. It's probably 25-50 to 1, the ratio. And so that's where that book came from. But like I said, I was always a member of the Bigfoot research organization. It's called the North American Wood Ape Conservancy. And the blog, the website, was something I kind of did on my own time. And the latest book, Valley of the Apes, is basically it's a summary of the last two decades in that organization and what we've done, both what we've done well, what we haven't done well, what we've experienced, seen, heard, and so on. So that's where that book came from. So, the Black Panther thing was kind of an offshoot of just the interest in cryptid animals in general.
Fast question before we go on, Michael. Do you have a day job?
I do, yeah. I am still a school teacher. I teach history at a middle school here in town. I coached football for 23 years, I believe was the number. And I recently had to give that up. I got skin cancer, and they told me I couldn't be out in the sun so much anymore. So now I'm strictly in the classroom. But so that's my day job. And I've got a few years left before I can retire from that.
Do your students have any awareness or any participation in your pursuits in the strange and unknown?
Yes and no. I don't necessarily broadcast it. I'm not embarrassed of it or whatever. I you have to be careful, especially when you're dealing with minors. I don't want to ever have anyone be able to say, well, I'm trying to sell books to kids while I've got them kind of under my thumb in a classroom setting. So I don't bring it up. They almost always discover it on their own. They're very tech savvy, and a lot of them have these interests. And I'm kind of an amateur folklorist on top of this, and I did a series of a TV station out of San Antonio contacted me a few years ago, wanted to know if I knew any great ghost stories and from the San Antonio area, and if I'd write them up. And so I did, and they took what I wrote, used it as narration, and they did these little animated shorts that they showed on the news at 6 and 10 the week of Halloween, 1 October. And I always show the kids those as kind of a reward for good behavior the week of Halloween. If y'all act right, do right, get your work done, I'll show you one of these. And I don't even tell them that I wrote them. But, you know, it's listed there. They see it. And so that if they haven't figured anything out by then, that's when the bell goes off for the first time, and when they can check a book out from the school library and they look on the back and there's my picture, you know. So sooner or later they find out, but I don't hide it, but I don't promote it with the kids either.
Well, the way they're censoring school books, they might decide that cryptids are obscene.
Well, it wouldn't. Not much would surprise me. I tell you what, not much would surprise me these days.
I know we've had guests on before that talked about how they would be giving a talk, say, like at a local library, and there would be people showing up who were picketing them, you know, because, you know, we talk about UFOs or ghosts or whatever is, you know, of the devil and things like that. So, you know, it's just anymore, you really have to be cautious, especially when you're dealing with school kids.
Well, you do. And again, that's why I don't want to be accused of trying to brainwash them one way or the other. You know, and like I said, I teach history and government. And you talk about a dicey area when you talk about this party and that party and the history. And oh, my gosh, you almost have to put a stopwatch on the time you talk about this party and make sure it's even for the time you talk about that party. It's really ridiculous. And someone is going to be offended by anything. I've never, you know, my whole life, I think we're living in a time where we're so ready to be offended. And people's skin is so thin. And I think coaching all those years thickened my skin up. It was good training to handle some of the slings and arrows that come. Cause, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of trolls out there. They live to get on their keyboard in their mom's basement and badmouth anybody that, you know, that believes in something or is interested in something unusual. And, you know, if you're sensitive, it can get to you. And, like I said, I think that coaching toughened my skin up enough where I can handle it.
I'm going to ask the big question that will carry on to our next segment. Michael, how did you become interested in the strange, the unknown, and the out of place?
I just always had an interest. I mentioned briefly earlier about growing up in the 70s, and I watched the In Search Of program that Leonard Nimoy hosted. Peter Graves had a show as well. I don't recall the name of it off the top of my head. I can see it in my head, but I can't recall the name right now.
Well, of course, that was not about Mission Impossible.
No, it wasn't Mission Impossible. It was.
I am joking.
Yeah.
Maze cryptozoologist. We have more to come with Michael and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number.
alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We continue with our guest, Michael Mays, studying cryptids, out-of-place animals, that sort of thing. Our guest co-host, Tim Swartz, has a question.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that Peter Graves may have also have hosted In Search Of, when either before or after Leonard Nimoy.
Okay, maybe that's it. Like I said, I do not recall. I remember it being Peter Graves very clearly, but I don't recall the show. But in any case, you know, whenever anything like that came on, well, I was all over it. In my elementary school library, there was a section of what we called the monster books, you know, Loch Ness Monster, the Yeti, the Abominable Snowman, Bigfoot, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I just checked them out over and over again, and just, you know, love that stuff. And I've told this story before, but my librarian, I think, was worried about me, and it got to the point where she would only let me check a monster book out every other time, and because she wanted me to be a well-rounded individual, and so the other kids could have a chance. But the interest has always been there, and grew up and, you know, got busy trying to get educated, make a living, and all that kind of stuff. And for a few years, it got put on the back shelf. But in, I guess, my early 30s, kind of, I heard a speaker with this organization that I'm involved with now discussing the Sasquatch phenomenon, and just said, you know, there's no reason now why I can't, you know, start to look into that. And of course, the internet had blown up, and so you, all this information was now available online, and you had to wade through a lot of silliness, obviously, but there's some good stuff out there, and it just kind of rekindled that interest. So I guess I was just a weird kid that never grew out of it. I guess that's the shorter answer to the question.
Looking at your site here, Texas Cryptid Hunter, and I'm going to read this phrase. This phrase was first introduced to the public in 1941 in the movie The Wolfman with Lon Chaney Jr. Even a man who is pure of heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's a story I mentioned earlier that I'm become kind of an amateur folklorist, especially when it comes to Texas folklore. A lot of the historical accounts of strange animals and things, they become the basis. They're the seed of truth in a lot of these folk tales and tall tales that come out later. And that's the prelude to a post I did, I think just a week or so ago, called The Lobo Girl of the Devil's River. And it's basically a very jungle book-like story If you recall that story, you know, Mowgli was raised by wolves in India and was the basis for Rudyard Kipling's book, The Jungle Book. And a similar story is said to have occurred in the 1800s in West Texas, out near the Devil's River. And so, you know, was she a werewolf like some people thought? No, she wasn't. She was basically a feral human that ran with a pack of wolves, if you believe there's any truth to the story at all. So, and I go on in the post there to say that maybe this is the seed of the werewolf legend, you know, incidents like this, when they see a feral human that's running with wolves and feeding off the same kills and things like that. And so that was the nature of that post. That's where that came from. And again, the seed of that comes straight out of old Texas folklore from the 1800s.
I wonder if when doing that movie they got the influence. There was another werewolf movie in the early Universal Horror Films franchises. That was The Werewolf of London.
Mm-hmm.
Where the villain was actually the same actor or one of the actors who played Charlie Chan.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Werner Olund. Why do I remember this? I thought it was a very slow-moving movie. I thought the Wolfman did it far better.
Yeah, the actor Henry Hull refused to have a lot of makeup put on him for his role as the werewolf, so that's why he looks so different than the later incarnations.
Well, I think the makeup with the Wolfman was really well done, and a lot of care was put into it, and you felt incredibly sympathetic towards the lead character, because he didn't ask for this. He didn't come in there being a bad guy. He just got bit by Bela Lugosi.
Yep, that's correct. And like I said, the folklorist in me, I thought the best part of the whole movie was the way the gypsy lore was portrayed, their belief system, and there's a parallel between how they acted, how close-mouthed they were with the townspeople, and how they didn't want to say what was really going on because they knew they'd be laughed at, they knew they'd be made fun of. Oh, they're just a bunch of gypsies, they're not trustworthy. You know, that's the way witnesses are today. You know, somebody sees something, let's say they have a sighting of a wood ape, a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch walk across the road in front of them. So many of them are so hesitant to say anything because they know the ridicule that they're going to get. And I found that there was a real strong parallel there, both the kind of the folklore aspect of it and the hesitancy of that group of people who knew what was going on, but the hesitancy to share that because they knew they wouldn't be believed. I think that's still something that's out there today, and something we hopefully, you know, you think we could learn something from it, but we don't ever seem to.
Well, speaking of folklore, now we know that Sasquatch in, say, like the Northwest, the Pacific regions, you know, the Native Americans have a very rich history of these creatures. What about down in your neck of the woods, Texas and Oklahoma? I mean, is there any folklore about the wood apes?
Yeah, there is. No, and it's one of the things I love is to dig out old historical accounts. Now, what you have to look for, the term Bigfoot, for example, that wasn't coined until, the 1950s. So what you see in a lot of these historical newspaper accounts, you see terms like wild man, hairy man, and things of that nature. You'll see the term gorilla. You know, Farmer Brown saw a gorilla in his hayloft. You know, it jumped down and ran away on two legs, and it was 7 feet tall. And, you know, and so there are these other terms that you have to look for. Chad Arment wrote a book called The Historical Bigfoot, and he's done this amazing research where all it is just newspaper clipping after newspaper clipping, that, you know, mainly from the 1800s and the very early 1900s, before Bigfoot, that term was even a thing. It was not even in the lexicon of you know, the average person's vocabulary, that you know, nobody knew what that was. And we have a lot of that down, you know, in deep East Texas, where I'm from, the southeastern region of Oklahoma, which a lot of people, when you hear Texas, Oklahoma, they scoff automatically, because the only Texas and Oklahoma they're familiar with is what they see in old John Wayne movies and other Western media. It's dry, dusty desert, right? And it's actually, you know, the eastern part of Texas and the southeastern and eastern border of Oklahoma that they share with Western Arkansas. It's heavily mountainous, heavily wooded. Matter of fact, when you take this spot where the four-state region of Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana, where they kind of come together, there's more forest land there than it's bigger than the entire state of Washington, which is kind of the holy epicenter of all things Bigfoot, right? There's actually more forest land in that four-state area than the whole state of Washington. So there's a lot of heavily wooded, mountainous, and then in the bottomlands you get a lot of swamps and marshes and just great habitat. And the forest is different. A lot of our forests, at least originally, were hardwood forest and very rich environments. And I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. John Bindernagel and his work with the Bigfoot research.
I'm not necessarily myself, but I suspect Tim Swartz is familiar with everybody on the planet. He tells me that. More with Gene and Michael and Tim, you're in.
Prepare your cast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Do you experience fatigue when you know you should have energy? One reason fatigue can occur is due to a lack of antioxidants in the body. This deficiency happens the older we get, or due to eating an unhealthy diet, or even due to exercise. Your body's number one antioxidant is glutathione. When your cells are depleted of glutathione, you will be fatigued, inflamed, possibly depressed, and may also feel pain. Empirical results indicate that consuming green metal whey protein powder is the most effective means of increasing glutathione production. Green metal whey supplies nature's richest source of the precursor to making glutathione within the trillions of cells of your body. This protein strongly supports the cell's ability to make glutathione. Add to this that green metal whey also supports immunity, energy, lean muscle development, fat loss, and has anti-cancer properties, and you have nature's most complete and strongest superfood. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.